worth conversation, because this morning some of you have heard me before, and we're going to get more out of the questions that you ask than out of the presentation, because the presentation is known to a number of you already. It happens that today is a memorable day in the Missouri Synod. They are interviewing three men. One of them will be chosen as the executive secretary for Hispanic ministries in the Missouri Synod. Something like you have with Dickinson for the blacks. Now, one of them is Pastor Carlos Hernandez. By the way, the H in Spanish is silent. So you don't say Hernandez, but Hernandez. It's like a fellow from New York who was in California for a few weeks, and he got back. He would say, oh, I visited so many places there. I went to San Jose and Tia Juana and so forth. He said, uh-oh, now what? Wait a minute. He said San Jose in Spanish. The J is pronounced like an H. By the way, what months were you there? He said, I was there in the month of July. But anyway, that reminded me. So the three men are Pastor Carlos Hernandez in Watsonville, California, and the other was Carlos Puy from Racine, Wisconsin. Now, Pastor Hernandez is a Mexican background, Puy is Puerto Rican background, and then they have one of Cuban background, Garcia. His first name is Alberto Garcia. He's now in Fort Wayne, isn't he? Kind of a get-together students there to train them for the Spanish ministry, which I think is a very wonderful thing. But before that, he was in Chicago. And he's a Cuban, originally. So it's a memorable day. And who will be selected, we don't know. And whoever will be selected, it will be a milestone in the Missouri Synod as far as Spanish work is concerned. I will tell you how all these things develop, because at the beginning it was very obscure mission work among the Hispanics in the United States until it increased. And now it is what it is now all over the United States. Before I say anything, I would like to give you a little background why we should do mission work, evangelism work, witnessing for Christ among the Hispanics in the United States. You know that the Roman Catholic Church claims that over 90% of the Latin Americans are affiliated with that church. This claim is not even nominally true. But suppose it were. The uppermost question is, are they true Christians? Are they true believers in Jesus as their Savior? One who travels in Latin America with the purpose of studying or finding out what the religious conditions in that region are will be confronted with so much spiritual ignorance, superstition, and idolatry. Bunch, the well-known Argentine sociologist, says, Spanish Catholicism is not really Christian. It is an anti-Christian Catholicism. As for superstition and idolatry, let me illustrate. A missionary went to the interior of Peru, and he happened to attend a large gathering. As he looked around, he saw a young man who appeared to be the most intelligent in the crowd. And he said to him, say, do you know who Jesus Christ is? And this man said, no. Well, how do you expect to go to heaven? And he pointed to a virgin in Indian colors and said to this missionary, that is my Savior. If you were to go to Argentina and go to the big cathedral, Buenos Aires, in the big Plaza de Mayo, and you go to the big cathedral, you enter, and you look to the altar, and you are impressed by two things. First, you see a statue of Christ, or about my height, that's not very high, on the floor, but it is the Christ with blood dripping down his face, with a sad countenance and a sad eye. Now, for you and me, that is correct. It is the Christ suffering Savior for us. But people don't understand it that way. However, the contrast comes when you look high over the altar, a huge statue of Mary with pink cheeks, with a smile on her face, with arms extended as if to say, come unto me, and of course you can make a parenthesis, not unto him, or ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now, people coming into that cathedral, they cannot but surmise the following. That Christ there is the dead Christ, an object of pity. But Mary, she is the living Savior, an object of adoration. No wonder that Bellarmine, one of the great men of the Catholic Church, said at one time, we can get more from God going through Mary than we can go through Jesus, her son. Now, those are the conditions that we find in many of those countries. And you may say, well, are they prevalent in the United States? And I would say, yes, if the person has a Catholic background either from Mexico or obtained here in the Catholic Church, in this country. Of course, the reason is the spiritual ignorance, the superstition, the idolatry that exists there. I was in Chichicastenango, it's not so easy to pronounce, but it's a town in Guatemala. And there, you're flabbergasted to see that right in the church, the Indians have their own worship in different sections of the church. They have no pews there. And they are worshiping their own gods. But it's allowed in the Catholic Church because they say, well, we can oppose it. But in the meantime, they are not learning about the true way to salvation. Reminds me, for example, in Peru, they have the Pachamama Maria. That's the saint for the Indians, the virgin for the Indians. Instead of saying the Virgin Mary, they say Pacha, Mama, Marias, which means the mother, Mary. So you see, this is that superstition that exists there, and exists here too. But it would be unfair to mention, though, that lately, particularly in the large cities, there has been a more liberal attitude toward Protestantism in Latin America. And this was begun, by the way, by John the 23rd. And you don't find what it used to be like. It was not uncommon for some natives to go into the home of a pastor, and this happened, by the way, in Mexico City one time, took him by the legs to the outside and shot him. And one of the Lutheran pastor of the ALC in Colombia, he had to flee his house with his family because there were some drunk fellows that had been inspired by the priest to go and kill him point blank. So that's the situation that existed. But I would say that now it's a little better, particularly in the large cities. In a small community, in the country communities, it's a little different. Now, there are quite a number of meanings. First, let us take a look at the spiritual and the physical need among the Latin Americans in the United States. It go, beyond what we usually understand by physical and material. It includes housing, education, job opportunities, health, and the like. The plight of the Hispanic American is in some instances even worse than that in which two other minorities find themselves, to wit, the Negroes and the Indian Americans. Some time back, a few years ago, Vanguard, which is a publication of the Lutheran Human Relations Association, had an article written by this man who is with Lacusa now. But he represents the Indian ministry, and in which he described vividly the condition of the Indians in these countries. And of course, the main need is spiritual. Spiritual need. How to tell the gospel to these people. Now, how about the opportunities to do this? When we consider the rapid increase in population of Hispanic Americans in this country, and we all know that they are very prolific. I don't know how many children Pastor Hernandez has or Mr. Mireles, who was here a while ago, but they are very prolific. And that by 1980, we will be, according to recent estimates, the largest minority group in the United States between 20 to 25 million. And by the way, how many of you raise your hands have read this? One, two. By all means, read it, because if you are interested in Hispanic ministry, you should read Time Magazine of October the 16th. October the 16th, 1978. And I can leave this copy here, so you can pass it along, because I have another one from my son in Jefferson City. There is no doubt that the opportunities are manifold. Add to this fact that we have states with large Hispanic population. And I'm thinking of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California. Of course, the largest Hispanic population is where? As in New York. They have over a million. And then you have Los Angeles with over 6 million, I think it is, making it the fourth largest city, the fourth largest Mexican city in the world. The first one is Mexico City, and the second one used to be Monterrey, but now it's Guadalajara. Then Monterrey is third, and then Los Angeles is fourth. So you can imagine what the opportunities are for us to do mission work. And of course we have Miami, with a very large, mostly Cuban population, not to mention the cities along the Mexican border, starting with Brownsville, Texas, all the way to San Diego, California. Then follow cities like Chicago, Detroit, Gary, Indiana, Milwaukee, Albuquerque, Philadelphia, Denver, and a host of them. In most of those cities, we have Lutheran work, but in many of them, it's minimal. It's minimal. The number of congregations is not really commensurate with the Spanish population. Now, let us consider how we should proceed. What action to take in order to avail ourselves of these opportunities is a long subject in itself. For the time being, a brief summary would suffice. Start at the local level. Every congregation where there is a Spanish-speaking population. This is very important. There have been cases, however, in which, because of racial discrimination, nothing has been done. Just now I'm thinking of a certain congregation in which, during a PTR, the leader was asked by the canvassers whether if they ran into a Negro family or a Mexican family, will they be all right to invite them to church? You know what the answer was? No. If they come, they're welcome, but you are not supposed to invite them. Imagine on the PTR, preaching, teaching, reaching, reaching mission. Congregation should really reach out on the line to the Spanish Americans in their communities. There are different methods of doing this. The Spanish Americans should be involved in every level of policy, formulation, adoption, and implementation. Tools should be provided for all for a full and relevant ministry in the community. Then the district level, the full use of radio, television, and audiovisual communicating the gospel to the Spanish-speaking people in the district should be used. Spanish materials, production and distribution, education, worship, stewardship, and leadership training materials should be prepared. This should be a continuing program. Missouri had a very good continuing program until the whole thing was turned over to La Cusa, and that was the end of it. Missouri at one time had the best religious magazine, including Catholic, in Latin America. It was delivered into the hands of La Cusa, and that was the death of Noticiero de la Fe. This you have the Hispanic Assembly, and this, of course, is a little late now because we do have a Hispanic conference composed of all the workers in our field, and they met last year in Chicago, and that was a tremendous success. And now things happen there that are being carried out today. For example, like this election of a man who will be the executive secretary for Hispanic ministries in the Lutheran Church - Missouri Synod. That should be continued. And now we have what we call a division of different regions in the United States. And we have East, Midwest, South, Southwest, and West, which is California. But at this time, I would like to have a graduate of Concordia Seminary St. Louis of 1969 who is doing bilingual work in Watsonville, California. That's not too far from San Francisco. Say a few words to you, and then I would like for you to ask questions. Okay?
Just to give you a little bit of a description of the kind of work that I do, I serve an English-speaking parish that is multicultural. In our parish, we have traditional German Lutherans. We also have traditional Mexican-Americans who speak English. We also have some Filipinos and some blacks. The community of Watsonville, which is, by the way, has anybody ever heard of Watsonville? Has anybody ever heard of Santa Cruz, California, Monterey? It's halfway between Santa Cruz and Monterey on the Monterey Bay. And it's an agricultural valley. If you buy strawberries in the winter, they usually probably come from Watsonville or Santa Maria somewhere, but we grow a lot of strawberries and apples. It's a very rich agricultural valley. And, of course, wherever you have agriculture, you're going to have Mexican-Americans working in the fields and also working in the stores and as lawyers and doctors and ministers as well. So that my ministry is basically an English-speaking bilingual ministry. Just this past Sunday, we began a Spanish speaking service in which English was interjected for the little kids. Maybe grandma and grandpa speak Spanish and mom and dad speak Spanish, but the kids a lot of times speak primarily English. The majority of the Southwest, of course, is Mexican-American as opposed to Puerto Rican, Cuban. The Cubans are primarily primarily in Florida, the Puerto Ricans in New York, New Jersey area. But the Southwest is primarily Mexican-American. Prior to 1848, of course, the Southwest was northern Mexico. And you do have many Mexican-Americans who were born in the Southwest, whose parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents were born in the Southwest when it was part of Mexico. So you have a different kind of situation in the Southwest where it has to be basically a bilingual ministry and not just monolingual. I think there's also a need in the Southwest for a heterogeneous type of parish as opposed to a homogeneous. When I'm speaking about an integrated parish, that's basically where the kind of work that I do, as opposed to having a two separate parishes, two separate congregations. This was I wasn't really on the agenda. I just called him last night, and he said, "I'm going to put you to work." So. But I'd be really happy to answer.
By the way, we have with us Pastor Hutchinson. He's kind of related to me in a way because he might be a lady from Puerto Rico, and he's a pastor of Christ Church, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think we need, and I'm talking about the Southwest, but I suppose maybe even more and more the rest of the country. You understand that the majority of the Hispanics are Mexican-American, and the concentration of Hispanics is in the Southwest, in the western portion. That's the greatest concentration. But I think more and more you're going to need a bilingual type of situation. Someone like you who speaks Spanish. You do speak Spanish now. I think it's a matter of, you mean a person who does speak nothing but Spanish. Is that what you mean? Yeah, I don't think that, let me explain the kind of situation that you're dealing with in the Southwest. I speak for the Southwest, and I think I also, the same thing is more and more with Cubans. You know, they come, for example, as immigrants. You know, we're not really basically an immigrant people, historically. You know, we were here. You know, this was our land. I'm talking about the Mexican-American. But for the Hispanics that immigrate, as soon as they step foot in this country, you begin the process of acculturation. Now, I'm not saying that that's totally, you know, the Japanese in California, of course, buy into the American culture of stock, corn, barrel. I mean, you know, they're just Anglos with slanted eyes and brown faces. You know, as far as dealing with a major society, you know, when they get home, that's a different story. But with the Mexican-American, he's a blend of the two. This is why we use the word Chicano in the Southwest a lot more and more, because we're a blend of the two cultures. And you're asking, well, do we prefer a Chicano? Do we prefer an Anglo? I think that it depends. I was asked this question this morning in my interview, and I said, one of the things about our people is that we have a sense, maybe a fifth sense, about the sincerity and about motives. If you are sincere, if your heart is really with my people and our needs, spiritual, physical, social, emotional, political, I'm going to be able to telegraph that, okay? I mean, I'm going to be able to see that. Supposing there's another guy over here who's brown, and he's one of my kind, you know? But he's an opportunist, you know? He wants to get places, and maybe he doesn't have my interests at heart. Not that he's a bad guy or anything, or an unchristian, but, you know. So it's hard to answer that question. I don't think it's a matter of either or. I think it's a matter of both and. Does that answer your question, or did I evade it?
Let me say something here. We had a pastor in Texas. His name was Jargo, of Norwegian background. And that pastor was more loved in the congregation in Houston, Texas, than any Mexican or Latin American that went there. He knew the language, but he had his heart in the work and with the people. And there was an old lady who had to have a leg amputated. He said, "I won't have the operation unless Pastor Jargo is next to me there." So it doesn't make any difference. For example, you are a specialist in Indian mission work. You should know the language somewhat, you know. Maybe not perfect, but you know the language. And then know the culture, like he said. And you will sit there because you're going to do a work there that they need. This is not to say that you don't need us. I think we need, very valuable in both camps. And by that I mean, for example, you take a community in the Southwest. That's maybe 75% Mexican-American, 25% Anglo. There's a Lutheran congregation there that wants to do mission work. Who should they call? Should they call an Anglo pastor who... you know, who speaks Spanish? Well, that's a possibility. But should they consider calling a Chicano pastor, a Mexican-American pastor, who, like Mireles or like Garcia over here, who are both bilingual and bicultural, who can deal in both situations, and who can minister to that Anglo congregation, but who can also, with ease, walk into the barrio and the community? See? And I think that this is what we're going to have to go more and more. The pastors, I think we're going to have to place bilingual, bicultural pastors in Anglo congregations to have a great opportunity for mission. You know, in other words, Anglos are going to have to be served by bilingual, bicultural Hispanic pastors. Because we have a lot of congregations all over the Southwest and maybe other parts of the country as well that find themselves in communities that are busting at the seams. And we will have the function of bridge builders between two cultures, because we're there's a part of me that's Anglo. I mean, maybe even German, because I went through the whole system. We have two more minutes, and I think you have a... Now identify yourself. Recruitment of Hispanics for the ministry and the teaching, and even we have a girl that lived in Colombia for a long time. She's a deaconess now, the deaconesses, for example, recruit them from the Hispanics if possible. But that doesn't mean that, for example, the Anglos. By the way, I don't use the Americans because we are all Americans. Mexico, Central America, South America, the West Indies. I use Anglos and Hispanics. We have had quite a number of pastors who have been very successful in the Spanish ministry, and they were not of a Latin background. So it works both ways. Any other questions? I was hoping to have Pastor Linus, but I'll tell you what I did. Schmidt is coming sometime in February, and he's going to talk to the group, if you saw this earlier. He's from the Board for Missions, who is more acquainted with the program in Fort Wayne than I am. Once again, I want to thank you very much.